Welcome back to Can't Wait, your community radio sports and nonsense program. We're back with Matt Milner, Rusty Boulay Stevenson. We're getting back into the NBA, but before we get into the weeds with the NBA playoffs, which I know we've all been watching obsessively, we got to talk a little bit about Scott Brooks, because we all expected the Oklahoma City Thunder to be here. Injuries took their toll, and so they were left, by a tiebreaker out of the postseason, and now the Oklahoma City Thunder finally decide they're going to make a change at the head coaching position right before Kevin Durant takes off in free agency. So, Scott Brooks on the chopping block. Fair or unfair, Matt Milner?
Fair, but late.
Yes.
I would have done this a season or two ago. And it's tough, though, because Scott Brooks, there's no question that he was very successful in the regular season. He had one of the best winning percentages in the NBA. His players loved him as well. So,
and his players got better.
And they got better. Right. It's a great point. I mean, he developed those young guys. I mean, it's a cliche now to say that people want to follow the Thunder model of, you know, you tank and you draft a few elite guys. But the reality is that Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook and James Harden, none of those guys were perceived as being can't miss slam dunk. They will develop into this player now.
Durant was... Reggie
Jackson.
I mean, Serge Ibaka,
absolutely. Yeah, I mean, Durant was the closest to a sure thing of any of them, but still, I think he has even exceeded his ceiling as it would have been anticipated when he came into the league. But that being said, there's no question that he was severely limited in his X's and O's creativity. I mean, watching those Thunder games in the playoffs when they'd get into a bogged down series, the lack of creativity coming out of timeouts and the lack of adjustment from game to game, it was mind-boggling. And when you were, especially when he was going up against coaches like Greg Popovich or Eric Spoelstra or the guys who clearly have that creative basketball mind, he was so far outclassed. And I think there's a ceiling on what you can do with Scott Brooks. And they probably should have made the change a couple years ago. The risk now is that if things don't gel with the new coach next year, that you have really damaged your chance of being able to retain Kevin Durant.
It's an impossible position right now. So if you're taking over the Oklahoma City Thunder, Rusty, what is it you try to do that Scott Brooks wasn't able to do?
Oh, gosh. I'm not an X's and O's guy when it comes
to
that.
Are you sure?
I'm not coaching in the NBA this year.
Taking some time off, spending some time with your family.
My family's really important to me. So I'm not an X's and O's guy, but I mean, that's what Matt's saying is dead on, right? I mean, it's dead on. It was painfully obvious in those playoff series that he wasn't either. And so, but Oklahoma City's a little hamstrung now.
Yeah.
They've gotten rid of Harden. They've gotten rid of Reggie Jackson. Now, they've brought in decent little players that are nice, capable players, but Durant, you wonder where he's going to be going. You wonder how his health is going to hold up. I mean, this season is very scary if you're a Kevin Durant fan or Kevin Durant himself. Very scary for you right now.
And the thing about the Thunder, what we know about them is they try to do the Spurs thing. Sam Presti is a Spurs guy. They always preach this Spurs model of loyalty and continuity, and all of that matters big time. But when you're running into the same problems year after year, for them to not even broach the idea of bringing in a creative assistant, somebody along the lines of what Golden State was able to do when they brought in Steve Kerr and they armed him with Ron Adams and Alvin Gentry.
Right.
That put Kerr, who had never coached in the NBA before, into a remarkably advantageous position of success that Brooks was never put in. I would hesitate to call the Thunder cheap, if only because you don't run a fracking business by, you know, pinching pennies, but they have pinched a lot of pennies.
Well, you do, actually.
Yeah.
But
you pinch the pennies to then pay off lobbyists to do all the horrible things you're doing.
That's right.
Not to get too political. But when you look at what the Thunder have done, the Harden trade was a cost avoidance trade. They didn't want to go into the luxury tax. Scott Brooks, had they fired him in 2012, 2013, they're in a position where they now have to pay two coaches. Clay Bennett and crew obviously didn't want to do that. They waited till his contract was up, cheaped out yet again, because they just did not want to bite that financial bullet, even though they're printing money.
That's what I'm going to say is Oklahoma City, they're the only game in town there. And so they were making money hand over fist. There's no reason why this organization, and that's what gets so frustrating about these cheap organizations in general, is that they don't want to spend the money that they're making. I'm not a business mind. I'm not. But to me, if you're going to buy a franchise, yes, it's going to make money, but should that be your primary objective? For us fans, certainly, we don't think so.
It should be that extra toy in your arsenal of toys when you're among the uber wealthy.
So, it's like a really big yacht.
Yes, something you get to show off. And so they were blessed to be in this position where they had a once-in-a-generation talent in Kevin Durant, another once-in-a-lifetime style basketball player in Russell Westbrook, supporting cast like you wouldn't believe, Serge Ibaka, one of the best two-way big men in the league, and now they've put themselves in a position where they have to get this new hire, whether it's Billy Donovan or Kevin Ollie, or if they want to try to make a play at Thibodeau. I don't know what it is they do, but whatever it is they do, they have to get it completely right, or it all goes away. Mm-hmm. This is not a team. This is not going to be a free agent destination if these guys leave. This is not going to be the kind of thing where you can just tear down and just get it all right in the draft again, because what are the odds that you just go get another Kevin Durant? You can't play it that way. So now they're in this position where they don't have Scott Brooks, this beloved coach, and when you were looking at the Golden State Warriors, they were kind of in that same boat, right? Where Mark Jackson got those guys to go from A to B, you know, kind of middling to good, and got them to play hard and buy into defense. But they saw that same isolation-heavy, stagnant, gross offense that didn't put transcendent generational players in the most advantageous position to succeed. Mm-hmm. They made the call to try to get great. Oklahoma City has never tried to get great. They've just assumed they would always be great. Mm. And they've painted themselves into a corner now where, let's say it's Billy Donovan, hypothetically. That's a guy that has never coached in the NBA, ever. I mean, everybody wants to look at Brad Stevens as being the kind of guy that was like, oh, look, this college to NBA thing can work. That's because he was given a situation with the Boston Celtics where they didn't expect to win the title immediately. He was able to grow into the job. Whoever takes this over, they can't grow. They have to, they have to win today. Right. How's that going to work?
And I think that it's an impossible situation for almost anyone, and a lot of it.
The players, too.
Yeah, for the players, too. But I think that the biggest problem is that whoever comes in, as you said, the window for success is 1 year. You have to succeed in that 1 year, or at least come close enough that you're able to convince everyone else that the model is in place to be able to succeed going forward. But they're going into an offseason where they might end up paying a boatload of money to Enes Kanter, which I'm not happy about.
Nobody is.
Yeah, I think that just reinforces a lot of the habits that have led poorly run teams to get stuck in mediocrity.
That's a guy you let walk.
Yeah.
Somebody wants to pay him $10 million a year, $12 million a year, let him do it. Fine.
Yeah, he's a one-way guy. You cannot play him on defense. You know, he's playing him next to Serge Ibaka, papers some of that over. But again, for $10 million a year, you got to have more. So their window may be closing here, and it's going to be tough for whoever they bring in. But the other challenge is that you can't just go out and get somebody who is in the Scott Brooks mold, because then why did you bother getting rid of him? I mean, they almost have to bring in a guy who's going to be more offensive-minded, more creative, maybe someone coming from an unconventional background. You've talked about Billy Donovan. Ettore Messina is another guy that's been thrown out there, the great European coach who's now a Spurs assistant. But it goes back to something that we've talked about when we're talking about drafts. There's this potential, this tantalizing unknown quality to bringing in coaches who either don't have a head coaching background or don't have an NBA background, but ultimately it's a crapshoot, and Oklahoma City is going to have to roll the dice.
I'll tell you what, too, is you know who else is in almost the exact same boat is the Chicago Bulls. The Bulls are in a very, very similar situation where if they don't keep their coach, which all signs point to the fact that Thibodeau is going to be leaving one way or the other, either on his own accord or on Bulls management, then You've got an aging Paul Gasol, which, I mean, he had a great year this year, but this isn't going to keep up. He's 35 now. The Bulls and Joakim Noah looks kind of hurt. You wonder what's going to happen.
Perpetually injured because of the Thibodeau minutes model.
Well, and his own throwing his body around, too. He's been doing
just
it.
Plays that hard.
He plays hard forever and probably did in high school. I didn't see his high school games, but I'm sure he was doing the same thing then. Yeah. And so the Bulls are in another spot like that, too, where right now, I mean, their next opponent is likely Cleveland. It is Cleveland. Cleveland won. And so they're going to run into a hard time now. And bringing in a new coach, how do you do it in Chicago, too?
You know, it's one of those situations where if Thibodeau's on the open market, every team with a coach in vacancy sets up a meeting. And when you're the Chicago Bulls, don't you have to look at that and say, why don't we just keep one of the most respected, intelligent coaches in our fold? Why? What are we doing? What's the plan? But maybe they think they've gone as far as they can with Tibbs. There are some coaches that just kind of they have like a 5-year window where players either get exhausted or start tuning them out. I don't know if the ownership thinks they've reached that point with Thibodeau, but all I know is that all of the competitors are going to want him if he's available. If you're the Bulls, it makes sense to keep a guy like that. What I want to bring up with Brooks, this idea that he couldn't match X's and O's with Rick Carlisle, Spoelstra, Popovich, all of a sudden makes him bad. Those guys are great. And I think that there is a place in the league, and there are a lot of teams right now, they need to go from inept to adequate. And I feel like Scott Brooks is exactly the kind of guy you bring in if you're, say, an Orlando.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you're the Denver Nuggets even. Just these kind of teams that have been stuck in, or, you know, the Nuggets weren't stuck in mediocrity. They were thrust there because their owner is a legacy kid who is going to tear that thing to the ground. I'm going to get really bad. I'm going to switch the topic to something else. But if you're a team that is going to be in a transition position and you have a lot of guys that maybe aren't as refined, you would bring in a guy like Brooks who has an established track record of getting guys to play defense, getting guys to play adequate NBA-style basketball with a work ethic and a determination and a knowledge of knowing what it takes to be a professional. That's a guy I feel like gets 6 or 7 job interviews this offseason.
Yeah, Orlando makes a lot of sense from a development perspective. The thing I worry about there is they have such a funky mix of players, a lot of really fun guys, but
you need creativity.
You do, yeah. So I worry that that would be the kind of job where it could be his second job and then his last head coaching job for a while
if it flames out.
If the Pelicans end up deciding that getting swept out of the playoffs isn't enough to save Monty Williams, I think that's an interesting fit for him because you really don't need a lot of creativity when you've got Anthony Davis. You just let him go crazy, you spread the floor with shooters around him, and that's really all you need to worry about from a creativity perspective.
Yeah, I just feel like there are enough really creative assistants that you would just pair him up with.
Sure, yeah.
I think he has skills as a head coach that Oklahoma City valued for a very long time and then decided not to value as soon as he lost all of his guys to injury.
Yeah, and that's why it's unfortunate that they made the decision this year when it very clearly it was not reflective of their performance this year. They did not fire him because they expected to do better with this under the circumstances. I think they fired him because they realized that they need to mix something up. They cannot rely on just having the most talented team in the league going forward to be able to succeed, because depending on what happens with Durant next year and how healthy he is, and you look at the way the rest of the roster shakes down, they're all of a sudden, you know, maybe the third or fourth most talented team in the West. And that's a very different situation.
Odds are we're going to see them next spring. But since we're not seeing them right now, what's one thing that has maybe caught your eye this postseason? Something maybe unexpected or something that you may have gotten wrong when we were doing our first NBA playoff preview, Rusty?
Well, I'll tell you, our first playoff preview, I said my Final Four included the Bulls and Cleveland, so that was wrong because that can't happen.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I didn't want to point that out, but that would have been a tough one.
But the truth of the matter is, though, is at the time, I still considered those your four best teams, and so that's why I went there. But now the Bulls aren't there. That's one thing that I've noticed is Derrick Rose isn't going to be great every game. He's not completely 100%, obviously. Joakim Noah's not 100% at all. He's dragging things down. I think the Bulls are not as competent as they looked at just last week, right? Like, yeah. That's one of the things that I see playing out, is a team that I thought had a chance at NBA championship potential, it probably isn't there for them.
It's funny because I had the total opposite reaction to the Bulls. I was kind of low on the Bulls coming into the playoffs because I really was worried that Rose was just not even going to be 60% of himself. But he has shown in the first four games, moments at least, of being able to be 80 or 90% of his old self.
And if he can get you 6 to 8 points you wouldn't otherwise get just by virtue of him being Derrick Rose.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And you know, Jimmy Butler's been phenomenal. They have you know, a tremendous amount of depth. But I also think that the East is opening up for them right now.
Hmm.
Because right before we taped this, the Cavs finished the job against the Celtics.
But, in the weirdest, ugliest way possible.
Oh, yeah, really. I mean, the Jay Crowder, J.R. Smith thing was a horrible thing to see. You know, J.R. Smith will certainly get suspended, but there's not a lot of precedent in the last year, a few years, for guys getting more than a one-game suspension for something like that.
But J.R. has a history of this.
Right. Do you think it'll be more than one game?
If it's me, I sit him at least two.
Yeah.
If only because he's done this before. He's lost his cool, and now he's putting people in danger.
It's pretty egregious. Putting people in danger is pretty egregious. I would give him at least two, but you're right. I mean, the NBA doesn't – they're not too hard on
– I mean, they went flagrant two immediately.
Yeah.
They ejected him immediately. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this is going to be like an Adam Silver line in the sand. Like, yeah. This is his first real big playoff suspension. Mm. I think he's going to make a statement.
Well, and let's say it's at least a couple games, right? He's out 2-3 games, something like that. Kevin Love, we don't know yet when we're taping this the extent, but dislocated shoulders are always tricky.
Yeah, especially for a guy like him.
Absolutely.
Shooting 3-point shots. I mean, yes.
Yeah.
Banging on the offensive run. He has got to get his arms over his head.
Exactly. Yeah, that is a really challenging injury for him to overcome. You look at other guys this year who have had dislocated shoulders. Some of them have been out for a month, 2 months. I mean, you just don't know. We don't know now.
Yeah. It can also be one day. I mean, a dislocated shoulder that doesn't have to be. It's bad for a guy who's that big.
Yeah. So in any event, the Cavs, though, could potentially be a little soft going into that Bulls series. If the Bulls are able to steal a game in Cleveland while, you know, the Cavs are without J.R. Smith or without Kevin Love, then I think that the Bulls all of a sudden become a more plausible contender out of the East than I would have thought a week ago.
Yeah, with the East opening up like that, I'm going to take it over to the West, where it looks like the cream is rising over there. The Warriors took care of business in a phenomenally entertaining series against the Pelicans. We've got this war of attrition with the Spurs and Clippers, where this should be at least the Western Conference Finals. It's just too good of a
series
happening right now. But when you look at the I did not expect Portland to get obliterated by Memphis. It's just a bad matchup, it turns out. That's just where we're at on that. But then I thought the most competitive, interesting, outside of that Spurs-Clippers series, I thought that Houston-Dallas series was going to be fascinating. Mm. I thought there was going to be a lot of weird, funky matchups that the power forwards on Houston were going to struggle to body up with Nowitzki. I thought the Mavericks presented some weird matchup quirks. I liked Rick Carlisle going against McHale. But they were subverted by the newest supervillain of not just basketball, but maybe of American sports, Rajon Rondo. What happened there? I mean, we were all kind of skeptical about whether or not Rondo was going to be able to work in what Carlisle wanted to do. He took that skepticism. And have you ever seen anybody just quit, just bail on a playoff series, just say, I don't want to do this anymore? This back injury is bogus. We all know it's bogus. He wanted out, so he quit. And if you're a free agent destination, and you look at this handful of months Rajon Rondo's put together where he doesn't guard anybody anymore, he can't shoot, he doesn't want to drive because he doesn't want to get fouled, and all he can do is just clash with coaches and quit on your team in the playoffs, what kind of contract could you possibly offer this guy?
I again, people overpay him free agency all the time.
Yeah, we all kind of figured he would just get his money.
Yeah, and that's what we were talked about last week. And I don't know. I mean, I could see somebody with very bad business acumen and NBA acumen.
You're talking about the Lakers.
I am talking about the Lakers. That's exactly who I'm talking about. And I could see somebody like them, just like with Kevin Love, saying, yeah, but Rondo was in Dallas. Yeah.
Look at all these All-Star appearances.
Look at all these. Look at the championship rings.
Look at 5 years ago. But it's 2015. How old is he now? He's in his early 30s.
I think that late 20s, early 30s. He might be 29. He's 29.
But a long-term contract takes him into his mid-30s.
The Lakers paid Kobe Bryant at the end of his career to be the highest-paid player in the league.
I actually kind of like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the Lakers situation is one that I think they were not making based on the assumption that they would be competing this year.
That's right. They weren't.
It was back pay.
Yeah, it was back pay. Exactly. It was thanks for being everything that you've been. And also, I think that it was a very convenient way for them to tank without having to be as egregious.
100%.
You know,
Mitch Kupchak's actually pretty smart, and I think they did that on purpose.
Yeah, he understood, you know, that if you've got half your salary cap tied up in, you know, in aging Kobe Bryant, that,
and this is how we treat our superstars.
Yeah.
So no, for the next to that.
Yeah, the next guy who signs there knows that they're going to get taken care of and that they can, you know, join the pantheon of Laker greats. One could argue whether that was still a rational decision.
Oh, completely irrational. But there is an argument for it.
There is
no argument for paying Rajon Rondo. Not one that is based in our reality as we know it in 2015.
I agree. And I love Rondo so
you were,
much.
You were Mr. Rondo. You were like the biggest backer. You couldn't be a bigger supporter of Rajon Rondo.
Just a week
Rondo.
Ago.
I still am. I love
He's
Rondo's game. But unfortunately, I'm just not sure if the Rondo that I love is ever going to be able to come back. I think that a lot of the clashing that you've seen with Rick Carlisle and the quitting that we saw in the series, I think a lot of that is a reflection of Rondo being frustrated that his body has betrayed him and that he can no longer be the player that he was when he was at his dominant peak. Because he was one of those guys who for his whole life, whether it was in the classroom or on the basketball court, he like had another gear. He could, you know, he could just flip a switch, go into that higher gear, and be able to be on another plane. And he could turn it on and turn it off. And not everybody can do that. He was able to. He had the gifts and he had the brain to be able to do that. He can't do that anymore. His body will not let him do that anymore. And I do not think that he has been able to cope with that new reality. And honestly, I don't see a lot of situations when I survey the league where I think if Rondo ends up there, he turns things around.
No.
Do you know of that place? I mean, Rusty or Nick, can you envision where that place is where Rondo, well, I'm not saying he goes back to being a superstar, but that he at least is a positive force on your team? Because I'm really struggling, even as a Rondo defender, to think of what that situation would be.
It's 1997.
Right.
The game, the NBA is no longer cater to a player of his specific skills at this point in time. He has to be not just a dominant, like floor general type who can get guys involved with his passing. He has to be the best we've ever seen. That is at minimum what he has to do to be able to stay on the floor, given all the other things he can't or won't do. We have a chance to talk to him right now in the next segment. Rajon Rondo is apparently coming in the studio. He heard everything we said, and he's here to pick a fight on our next segment of Can't Wait.